the question is, how do we have radical action in an increasingly conservative time? And of course, we all know the resurgence and the re-emboldened aspect around what the sceptics are up to and how that's tying into mainstream politics. I guess the question is, well, how do we hold the understanding of the severity, the terrifying severity of what climate science is telling us is coming if we take no action now, with the facts of the matter? And here in Victoria, one of the facts of that matter is we have a government in power that hasn't even released a climate change policy. Like, I, you know, it's the 21st century. I find it astonishing that we can, you know, read Climate Co, read all the science and go, my God, this isn't a conversation around turning emissions around next decade. This is a conversation about that should have happened 2 decades ago, if not longer. I know our organisation started working on greenhouse issues in about 1988. It's been apparent to anyone paying the slightest bit of attention what's coming. So how do we kind of, in effect, balance those two parallel worlds of the oncoming freight train of climate change with the niceties of political reality? And as Clive very nicely pointed out, the tendency towards incrementalism. And I guess that's something I try and grapple with a fair bit. And a couple of things come to mind. I guess the simple answer, when I think of how do we do radical work in a conservative context, I would say look at the work of Six Degrees, Friends of the Earth Brisbane, up against coal seam gas. Is anyone familiar with the campaign, the Lock the Gate campaign that's happening? Amazing. Broad-based alliances, increasingly deep alliances, non-usual suspects, that is, blockies and farmers that aren't normally the allies we think of, good old-fashioned organising and good old-fashioned direct action, and a line in the sand. I think that if we look at what people want, people that are switched on to climate change, we are sick of compromise. And we were blocked for more than a decade by the Howard government from action. We have such a dishonourable decade of political history there in the international negotiations. We failed comprehensively at that point. We then got that brief 15 minutes of joy in 2007 when Peter Garrett jumped on a plane and went to Bali and said, yes, the rich will go first. We're going to do the right thing on climate change. It all evaporated. Cancun, Copenhagen, you know, it's all been, if you like, unmitigated failure. Whatever we might think of the first stage of the emissions trading scheme, stepping away from that, stepping away from action, was obviously a complete collapse of courage in the case of the ALP at that point. So we're getting very used to failure. And I think it is really important to remember we actually can't afford to have that anymore. And that needs to shape what we do now. So the political parties, of course, the mainstream parties continue to go to the right. The gap between the two main parties gets ever thinner. Society is ever more complex and choppy. You know, there's more volunteerism, but there's more isolation. There's more people opting out of political processes, but you look at things like AYCC or Get Up with, you know, hundreds of thousands of members. There is no single reality out there in the community, and I think that we can't pretend to go, if this is a model, we'll adopt it, we'll move forward. I think we need a really nuanced and very detailed model based on local realities against that backdrop of conservatism. The possibility of, well, the conversation about what's possible, of course, is very constrained. We're having a conversation about should we have a carbon tax at present, whereas probably everyone in this room knows what we need is an end to our reliance on fossil fuels, an end to the digging up and export of coal. That's evident to us, and yet that is so many light years away from that conversation that's going on in The Australian, in The Herald Sun, and in the halls of Canberra. So the first thing is, I think what we need to do is to be brave enough to draw a line in the sand. And that brings with it a whole bunch of problems, and I just want to unpack some of them for a minute. So we've got the tension, what's needed, what's possible, and then this middle ground we need to step into really boldly, which is direct, strong action around ending as soon as possible our reliance on fossil fuels and driving that transition to a 100% renewable economy. Thankfully, with groups like VZE, we actually have a pathway for that, and that's very important because, of course, people, if you're going to go down a path and potentially a scary path and an uncomfortable path, you need to know your destination. And BZE have sketched out a bit of a pathway of where that might be. So knowing your destination, even if you don't know every step of the journey, I think is really, really important. We need to understand we've gone around a corner in that path because even a couple of years ago, we didn't really know where we're going when we were saying, let's close down Hazelwood or let's stop exporting coal to the rest of the world. There's two things going on at present nationally that we need to pay attention to, but they're actually quite different. One is the tactical need to engage the sceptics on the streets and look at those amazing rallies in Melbourne and Canberra where the flat earthers came out and we outnumbered them, you know, by factors of 5 or 10. We can't ignore that. And I think, as we know full well, there's diversity in the movement about emission trading schemes. Do we like them or not? Market-based mechanisms. Do we even want a price on carbon? Do we want offsetting? All that. There's probably, 100 people in the room and probably 100 different opinions on that. But what we do know is we want action. So I think a big part of what we do at present has to be to mobilise, like in the last session, writing the letters, letting the opinion makers know, getting on talkback, writing to the papers, and getting out there on the streets. That's really important in the short term. The longer term, of course, is mobilising the bulk of the people. And the problem is you've got people like us that are really well mobilised on climate change. You've got a much smaller number of people on the other side that are mobilised and ideologically committed to climate scepticism. And you've got this 80 or 90% of people in the middle. So while we have to engage with those people, if we give them too much attention, we forget about everyone else in the room that's actually whistling and not really paying attention. And of course, we know that climate scepticism that says do nothing, it will be fine, is a really comfortable message to people. And so our message is actually pushing it uphill because we're talking about rights and responsibilities and danger and, you know, ecosystem collapse and climate refugees and all that type of stuff. It's scary. These people are saying, nothing to see, move along, it's all okay, just keep doing what you're doing. We need to understand that because that's really important for when we do the direct action that is required. Because, of course, we know in Australia, this isn't Latin America, you know, we don't have those broad-based political traditions of getting out on the streets and getting rowdy. And direct action can be so easily sidelined to the crazy left-wing, you know, greeny tree huggers. And so I think that in framing our strategy around direct action, we need to think very clearly about the link back to the rest of the people. So short-term tactical organising, a shift as a movement away from incrementalism into direct action, but back-ended by speaking to and engaging with the bulk of society. The transition decade has some great ideas around what they call saturation mobilisation, going out and reaching people. The thing to remember, of course, is that the bulk of the people in society are likely never to get mobilised on this. It's just there are so many barriers to action. It might be language, gender, class, ethnicity, personal circumstances, mortgages, health. We actually can't expect to get 100% of the people, in effect, out on the streets. So we need quite a strategic plan that lives in that political world that says the greenhouse mafia have impact. We need to, in effect, outnumber them and project intent to the leaders of the day, whilst also mobilising as many of those people as we can and doing what we can to, if you like, neutralise and destabilise and marginalise the sceptics out there. So more than ever before, we need a really broad-based and nuanced plan. My experience in the state election here was I was going out once a week and... How am I going? Oh, my God. In that case, I will wrap up because I won't go down that path because that was a whole other side rave. We need multiple messages. Look at the smoking ads. At present, you know, the classic smoking ads is, oh, if you smoke, you'll cough up blood and get lung cancer. But now it's shifting to, if you stop smoking, you start healing. Now, that's going to appeal to different demographics. Young people taking up smoking, the message they need is smoking isn't cool. So what we need is a range of messages rather than just around a carbon price, just around 100% renewables, just around beyond coal. We actually, I think, need a multitude of messages. And I understand the argument that that can be confusing, but I actually think at this point, in order to reach the maximum number of people, we need to have multiple messages. We need, as never before, to put our personal differences aside and recognise that we do actually, in this point where we have a pretty ugly street fight going on in the political realm, we need to put the wagons in the circle and make sure we're shooting out rather than shooting in. And the left and progressive movements, we love to fight and disagree, but I actually think this is a time where we need quite a degree of discipline on that one. And then, finally, I think the thing to say is, so you've got the sceptics, we need to engage them, we need to marginalise them, we need to spend the next 3 to 4 years, and certainly here in Victoria, speaking and engaging in a really localised level with that 80 to 90% of people that aren't engaged, that are uncertain, that aren't quite sure, that might be prone to going into that camp if we don't speak to them in a real way. We need to have the direct action amongst, if you like, the people that already believe, But the Achilles heel is that gap between those two groups. And I'd suggest that the bulk of our work actually in the next 3 years is not the initial mobilisation and engagement with that 80%. It's actually what do you do when you've got their attention? And I know our group has been very poor at going from talking to people and in effect getting their names and starting to send them a newsletter with then, if you like, them being locked onto a conveyor belt at Hazelwood. And I actually think that's where the 95% of our work needs to be done. And if you like, it's a bit like first response. You know, you fall over in the street, the ambos come. We're kind of like the ambulance, the paramedics at this point. We get people up on their feet again, pat them on the back and say, are you okay? Keep going. We don't have that backup preventative care. The looking after people, the guiding them to the next stage, the explaining why it's great you've written the letter. What about coming to a rally? Now you've come to the rally. What about just going and having a look at the fence at Hazelwood? Now you've gone down there. And unless we do that, we know, look at the Australian, look at the campaign they're running against the Greens, we know that wedge will be driven. As our movement of direct action gets stronger, the wedge will be driven between the crazy lefties and the bulk of society, and we need to be smarter than never before, have a radical agenda, but take the people with us.